Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Before I introduce today's guest, remember what's coming up. Good old Black Friday and the holiday shopping season. Now, I know a lot of you think holiday shopping is fun. You're really looking forward to getting up at 3 a.m. or whatever they do on Black Friday. But if you're like me, you'd rather avoid the crowds. And here's an alternative idea for gifts for close friends, family, and loved ones, or for yourself for that matter. On our website, www.middleagerenewal.com, we have a bookstore with a great collection of hand-picked motivational and inspirational books that you can order right over the internet. No parking hassle, no crowds lining up in the stores. These are books all about middle age and its challenges. And of course, we include my two books, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. But we also include a select sample of outstanding books, most of them written by prior guests on this program, plus a few standards like The Secret by Rhonda Byrne or How to Make Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, that type of book, just in case you want a classic. And no need to search far and wide on Google and elsewhere to locate books perfect as a holiday gift for your middle-aged friends and family. And we offer for purchase five different categories of inspirational books: personal midlife renewal, business leadership and career, marriage, parenting, relationships, exercise and nutrition, and spiritual connection, making connection with a higher power, which we all need to do if we are people of faith. So I urge you to now go to our website, middleagerenewal.com. Well, heck, listen to the program first, then go. And once on site, you just click on the store tab, and then you can go right to the store and access the full range of available books for sale. It's a real easy way to give something to close friends without all the hassle of shopping at the mall. And now, on with the program. Well, as we near year end, most of us will be thinking about our New Year's resolutions. And let me ask you a question. Do your resolutions involve becoming more assertive, taking greater control of your time, and improving tough relationships in the new year? At work, controlling more of your own agenda, seeking out varied and stimulating assignments that will get you noticed up the ranks, perhaps promoted? Away from the office, spending more quality time with your family, cutting back on busyness, less important activities that take up so much of your time? At home, improving communication with your teenagers and helping guide them to responsible adulthood? And with your spouse or life partner, rekindling that warmth and romance from early on in your marriage? Well, here's a simple truth. The only surefire way to accomplish life objectives is to believe in ourselves 100%, take control of our emotions, initiate actions, and get others to buy in. But guess what? If you're like me, you may find that the biggest obstacle blocking accomplishment of cherished resolutions is other people. It's one thing to commit to positive emotions when you're all alone and meditating, quite another when you're interacting with your boss, coworkers, even your spouse and offspring, each person following his or own her own personal agenda. And for lots of reasons, certain folks, perhaps your boss or a colleague at work, strangers in passing, one or more family members, some on occasion others routinely get on our nerves, put a damper on our good mood and psych us out. And from time to time, all of us encounter these type of people, perpetual complainers who routinely make sour comments and observations, spreading negative goodwill our way, self-centered, overbearing individuals. It's all about them. They couldn't care less about what you want or how you feel. Unscrupulous persuaders, that old salesperson type, those who go to any length to have their way, no matter that you matter, only if it benefits them. and that's really all they care about. Or how about poor me downers who intimidate through the back door, making you feel sorry for them in order to get their way. And to move your life forward to a joyful and purposeful second half, you will need to positively assert yourself around difficult individuals and to constructively communicate what you want. It's not always easy, is it? Like me, from time to time, you are confronted with inner frustrations like this. You get tongue-tied and lose your nerve every time your boss loads you up with unrealistic workloads and deadlines. How can you say no without hurting your career? Or you just don't know how to say no to a persuasive person who asks you to volunteer, even though you're already overwhelmed, neglecting family and career. Or you're treated like a doormat by your spouse, your kids, your boss, your fellow employees, whoever. They routinely expect you to give in and put your own interests last. And maybe you have thin skin. It really hurts when an aunt or your mother-in-law criticizes your behavior, even if she is well-meaning and her observations make some sense. And what if you could design and perfect your very own psychological self-defense, a useful formula for dealing with difficult people? And we have with us today the perfect expert to help us out. Returning for his third visit to the program, I welcome back the sage of the Lone Star State, Dr. George Zagreitis. And as you may recall, he's known affectionately as Dr. Z. He's uniquely credentialed both as an MD family physician and as a licensed clinical psychologist. He takes a whole person approach to wellness, offers comprehensive, easy-to-follow advice on building energy and enthusiasm, reducing stress, and combating illness, tiredness, and depression. And he's author of several books, including the one we'll highlight today, Don't Let Them Psych You Out, Psychological Self-Defense for Dealing with Difficult People. And hello, Dr. Z, and welcome back to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Roy, what a pleasure being back on the air with you. And wow, after that introduction, I'm going to have to step up my game today. I'm sitting here trying not to be psyched out into being the sage of the Lone Star State. That's great. Thank you.
Well, let's start with the basics. In your expert opinion, why is it that we so often get psyched out around certain people, maybe even before they have had an actual opportunity to offend us?
Yeah, and this is a problem that just plagues millions of people. Yeah. There's all kinds of theories out there and all kinds of, ideas and postulations and hypotheses and all that. But I really look at it as in many ways, there are sort of two kind of basic personality types. The nice people and then the maybe not so nice people. And it doesn't mean that somebody's well-meaning or not well-meaning or, you know, whatever, because, you know, we can have a pushy relative that's really a nice person, but, you know, they're manipulating you or trying to manipulate you. So
yeah, I often positive way, I guess.
Exactly.
You got to come with us this weekend, you know.
Exactly. But people will take on these roles of kind of the pusher and the pushy, and some of us are a little more prone to being the pushy than others. I've wrestled with this many times in my life. Being generally referred to, you know, or thought of as a nice guy, a nice doctor who wants to help people. Yeah. And unfortunately, you set yourself up sometimes to others deciding to use that to get their own agenda satisfied.
Yeah. You know, as a doctor, you always have to you want to be nice and understanding, but on the other hand, sometimes you have to put your foot down when somebody's violating what's best for their health or whatever.
And I promise you, every physician and other healthcare provider deals with that on a fairly regular basis. And it's our goal. We're the ones that are trained and have the schooling and the experience. That's what we do as healthcare practitioners. And our job is to help direct people and offer our opinion as to what's best for them. But in the book I talk about these what's often referred to in psychology as an amiable personality. Yeah. So somebody who's very motivated to be friendly, and have warm relations and everybody get along.
Yeah.
And then the driver personality, which is the personality that sort of kind of pushes to get what he or she wants done. And you put those two together and you often get this power imbalance, which sets things up so that you are feeling psyched out if you're one of those nice, amiable people.
Yeah. Well, as you point out in your book, one of the major reasons we become intimidated is we're blindsided by another's request, demand, or maybe a criticism. Are there ways to prepare ourselves in advance for anticipated difficult interactions so that we can respond effectively without blowing up, sounding weak, or just meekly giving in? I mean, how do we prepare for what we know is going to be a difficult confrontation or something we'll have to deal with?
Right. I think the first step is realizing that these kinds of situations are there. And so being aware of your own behavior and your own responses. By the time somebody is, you know, reading a book like mine or, you know, going in for counseling or something, they generally have an idea that there's, you know, there's some issues in their life, and they maybe feel like they're a doormat, or they get walked all over, or they, you know, wishy-washy, whatever.
Yeah.
But keeping, you know, so kind of understanding where you're coming from and sort of identifying, like, hey, here's my personality, and I'm prone to this.
Yeah.
You need to do that first. You know, you need to have the personal insight before you move forward with ways of dealing with it. Now, I've dealt with this a lot in my own life over the years, and I've developed some techniques that I find very helpful. Yeah. I'm gonna just clue you all into the y'all. Do you like that? Since you referred to me as the sage from the Lone Star State. I'm going to clue all listeners in to what I find to be a very, very powerful technique to deal with the situation you just mentioned, which is getting caught off guard, right?
Yeah.
So if you understand you get caught off guard, then what I recommend people do is practice what I call a ready reply. So you sit down.
Yeah,
it's very powerful. And what this involves is you come up with just some defense statements or just some generic, vague types of things that you can say, and you practice these over and over, so that when somebody catches you off guard, your automatic response is, "Let me ask my wife." Or your automatic response is, you know, let me think about it.
Even though you've been divorced 10 years.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. So that makes for a great
change that a bit.
you'd have to change it to fit your personal situation. But the idea being coming up with, you know, and practicing some statements that you have, so you have something to say, and you actually get a practice partner, and so you'll get somebody to practice with you and just sit there and have them shout out all kinds of crazy requests, and you practice saying no, or I don't feel comfortable, or and then when you get into the real situation, you've practiced it so that you can gently defend it, deflect it, and get yourself some space and time in order to decide if you really want to do it.
But you may want to consider some other offers you have for the weekend, for instance, or if it's a social engagement or whatever.
Exactly.
Not have to immediately reject an offer or an idea, but on the other hand, you have to talk.
Yeah.
You really do have to talk to your spouse, or you really do have to look at your calendar, and you can get back to that person later. That would be
exactly
the ideal way to postpone the
And postpone
need.
It, or just decide if this is, you know, somebody comes up and says, "Will you bake cookies for the, Sunday picnic at church?"
Yeah.
Well, maybe you don't. Maybe that's not what you really want to do, or you don't have time. Yeah. You'd like to, but you can't. And then there are a lot of people that will have that kind of request out of the blue, and they'll go, "Oh, okay," because they're caught off guard, get tongue-tied. And they end up agreeing to do something they don't really want to do or can't do. And so that's what this is all about.
I got a kick out of the one of the reviews. I think it was your other book, 1001 Excuses or something. And they pointed out that before they read that book, they were the number one volunteers at their church. They were complaining about how they didn't have any time or any energy left to do other things. So you can certainly get into a pattern of volunteering for too much.
Oh, and especially in middle age, you know,
yeah.
And we've got, you know, all of us in middle age have many commitments,
yeah.
often parents on one side, children, grandchildren on the other end,
yeah.
And so often, you know, in limited energy at times, and so, you know, we want to, you know, cherry pick the volunteering that we can do, so that we're fully committed to it and enjoying it. Because life's just too short to agree to be, you know, the volunteer of the year,
yeah.
unless that's what you really want to do. And
yeah.
again, a lot of people get caught in these requests and demands.
Volunteer for something they're not really that good at. Like if I volunteered for Habitat for Humanity, I'd probably just pound my own thumbs or something, you know. I'm not a good at carpentry work or anything like that. I think it's a great organization, but I think you should stick to what you're good at. Like,
yeah,
you know, I'd be a good Toastmaster or something like that at a
and you're a you're a wonderful radio host, and so you're fantastic at that. So and we all have our gifts and skills.
Yeah.
So yeah,
well,
absolutely.
You, not I, are the trained psychologist, but I'd venture to guess that getting psyched out by another has much to do with our own lack of inner conviction, maybe your self-esteem, as much as
right.
the other person's demands. Do you agree
right.
with that, or in your experience, are well-adjusted, self-confident patients and clients less likely to get psyched out by aggressive demands and unreasonable requests than others? I guess a lot
absolutely.
Of it has to do with
yeah. yeah. Oh, it, absolutely, how one sees oneself. So I, you know, often in my counseling and coaching and also my medical practice, you know, work at helping the patients and clients develop that confidence, you know,
yeah.
looking at the self-esteem, and lots of low self-esteem out there that, you know, too often manifests itself as giving in to these unrealistic, you know, requests and the like. So I try to work with people to help them become more assertive. Okay, and so a foundation of being more assertive really is self-esteem. But what I find, too, is by even if a person doesn't have a lot of self-esteem or they just don't feel that great about their abilities, by helping them practice becoming more assertive, they actually start to develop that confidence and that self-esteem. And I've had many people, by the time they've gone through the techniques I have in the you know, discuss in the book, find that they have a lot more confidence because they feel they can handle this, you know, incoming, you know, a fire, you know, from all these assaults, you know, of volunteering here, there, doing this, that,
yeah.
and you know, the kids needing and wanting this, and parents, you know, wanting something else, and the, you know, the school needing this, and the church needing that,
yeah.
and the boss wanting this. But yeah, so I work with helping folks become more assertive. Now that's different than becoming aggressive,
yeah.
and people get this mixed up all the time because I and all
point.
Of this yes and all of this one has to absolutely be honest and
yeah.
absolutely not be aggressive or ugly or
you
anything
can be
like
extremely
that,
concerned yeah. about others and loving to others without accepting every request.
Just exactly my point throughout the book. You know, you can care and love, and that often requires becoming more assertive with
yeah.
protecting yourself or keeping yourself together.
Yeah.
Because once you've got yourself together, that's when you really can branch out and help others.
Yeah,
really and help them
help others
more
very
truly.
Much. Yeah. You're not totally confident in yourself and feel good
exactly.
about yourself. If I have a negative attitude toward my own life, I'm not going to inspire many others to a positive outlook.
Exactly.
Well, let's talk about several categories of different people and how best you can relate to each of them to avoid being psyched out. How about the nosy neighbor, the lady or gentleman down the street? Not usually the gentleman. I hate to be sexist, but who is always prying into your family's business. Should you confront that person face-to-face or simply avoid contact and let it ride? I know my wife's always concerned about neighbors' gossip and things like that.
Right, and so we have to, I think, step back on some of this and look at sort of our the basic principle behind don't let them psych you out, and that is changing one's thinking, one's emotions, and one's behaviors, right, to live more effectively. So in a lot of instances when there, you know, there's gossip and nosy neighbors and all kinds of things going on, I think the first part in changing the thoughts is to realize that you really can't control what other people out there are saying or doing or thinking. And you're right, and just kind of becoming, you know, comfortable with that, that whole idea that, you know, the change actually occurs between your ears. So in other words, in your head, not so much.
If you're confident in yourself, you don't worry so much about what somebody else is saying about you if you know 100% it's not true.
Right, and so it doesn't really matter what's going on out there or what other people are saying or doing. If you're comfortable inside in your own head and you feel that you're okay with yourself, it doesn't really matter what the nosy neighbor is saying or thinking. Now, but that doesn't mean, you know, there aren't sometimes behavioral strategies that you need to employ. And so, for example, if the nosy neighbor is trying to pump you for information, you could have a ready reply, something like, oh, I never talk about personal finances. Let's talk about something else. How's the weather? How are you doing? You know, something like that. So there are behavioral strategies that sometimes come into play, and sometimes there's a technique I just refer to as silence. And sometimes when somebody's being rude or whatever, you could stare at them and just not even answer and change the subject and go on to something else.
Or if you refuse to second a gossip remark about a hurtful remark about somebody else, the gossiper usually will find another target or will realize that you're not a good receptive audience for their gossip. But how about an unfair or overbearing boss that loads you down with projects and leaves you little or no discretion? How do you stand up and ask for relief without getting fired? I know that's a challenge for a lot of us.
That's quite a challenge for everybody. And we have to be practical about these things. There are just times when you're in a situation and you're just stuck. And if you're an amiable, nice person and an employee, and your boss happens to be a driver, not nice, demanding, I mean, you know, your first step's probably going to be to try to work on, you know, what's going on in your own head. So just trying to kind of it's okay, I'm okay, I know this is what it is, it's just kind of that over there and interference and those kinds of comments, and I'll do my job and do my best and not let it bother me.
Yeah.
Now, that's easier said than done, because in a lot of situations, it's so miserable, the person can't really function as well as they should. So sometimes just having an open discussion, if that's, you know, if the boss is receptive to that, that's great. A lot of times they're not, though. And you know, at some point you have to be practical, as an employee, and decide, do I continue to stick with this, or, you know, is it time to move on to, you know, greener pastures?
Yeah,
I've had to deal with this myself, as you and I know. We've talked about, you know,
I would think the only way really to go about that would be to, make your lessen workload appear to be in the boss's interest.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow convince him or her that, if you had more time to do such and such a project, you could resolve it better or come up with better solutions. And if somehow it gets to be in their interest, maybe they'd, listen more intently.
Exactly. So there's a variety of behavioral sorts of things you can try to do. If you're in a powerless situation, which most employees are, I don't recommend aggressive, approaches or approaches that might be taken that way. I really think you've got to use some good judgment in terms of how you practice. Now, practice these things and put them into play. Interestingly, there's a lot of current thought on this younger generation, and I don't want to sound like an old person, but
the millennials,
the millennials, and how they respond if you're the boss. And there are actually seminars and all kinds of trainings for bosses in how to handle these young workers, because they will very quickly, if they're not praised or just in the slightest not happy about something, they'll just walk.
Command and control type environments are fast.
So you know from the boss side, you don't want to let them psych you out, and then again you have to approach those folks in a certain way to help motivate them to stay with the job. But see, I always believe in building on positives. Whatever you do, whatever side of the desk you're on, or the whatever, but building on positives. In other words, trying to work out solutions that are good for everybody, happy for everybody. Getting everybody win-win. That's the absolute best way to do it. So always, work on that first. Be honest, be straight with it. I'm not comfortable with this, or I feel like we could be more productive if we did this, setting limits with neighbors.
Make it in the other person's best interest as well as your own, obviously. How about the pushy salesperson that makes you feel guilty or a big loser if you don't buy today, keeps coming at you and won't take no for an answer, and you don't even have time to breathe to make up your own mind? How do you deal with the pushy salesperson?
We were looking at furniture the other day. We are dealing with this, this is another good one that most of us can relate to. Now I also have to say that it seems like whenever we need a salesperson, we have a question, there's nobody anywhere. And it's like the store's empty. Where is everybody? And if we just want to walk in and quietly look and comparison shop, which is typically what we like to do, my wife and I, then we're bombarded, and people that will just kind of leech on at you, and just a constant sales pitch around the store. Typically in those situations, I accept it for what it is. That's they're trying to work on their commission, we've just had to at some point sometimes say like, oh, we're just here looking. So kind of a ready reply. We're just browsing, and just kind of get them off of our case for a little bit, but. That's a tough one. Now you've got to, as a consumer, if you're at all prone to being manipulated, especially by salespeople, you've got to have some ready replies and some things available, tools available to resist being manipulated into buying something you really don't want or need. The gym membership scenario.
Before you go into the store, you have to have clearly in mind whether indeed you are looking for a specific item and
what
you're willing to spend on it and what you
exactly. And fortunately, the internet and a lot of other resources these days allow you to comparison shop, and a lot of these places have cleaned their act up. I know the gyms were traditionally, noted for, convincing people to buy memberships, car salesmen, RV salesmen, just all kinds of salespeople. And I'm going to tell you, there are a lot of fantastic, honest, wonderful salespeople out there. I don't want to sound like I'm railing on any of those. But I'm in particular, I'm concerned about the people that get pushed into buying things from salespeople that are maybe using, questionable tactics to try to make sales. So I think doing your research beforehand, going in with a firm, like you said, a firm, here's what I can spend on whatever, here's what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
And then just having some ready replies for when they're coming at you with it, and
yeah,
just not allowing them to, you know, to manipulate you into a purchase that you really don't want to make.
Sales, you know, tomorrow the price goes up double and all this kind of...
It's part of our consumer-oriented society, and we've constantly got that. I honestly was out making a purchase some years ago, and the vehicle and the salesperson pulled the, well, there's a retired couple from Florida looking at this, you know, and that's kind of the old, I mean, they pulled that on me. I was like, well,
yeah,
that's great. And, you know, we've just had all kinds of interactions with people, and, you know, people are trying to make a living, and
yeah,
I certainly understand that. But I, on the other hand, and a lot of people, you know, don't want to get pushed into, you know, purchases that aren't in our best interest.
You make such a good point that you, and not just in salespeople, but in everybody you're dealing with, you need to recognize where the other person is coming from and what's their
right
motivation, as
exactly
well as your own, so that you can see through the soft talk.
Yeah.
You know, those kind of things that make you feel like it's to your benefit when it's really to theirs. But
exactly. So it just takes really, you know, staying on your, on your feet with all of it, and really keeping alert to it. I am very concerned about some of the more recent phone solicitations are manipulating older people who are perhaps more vulnerable for one reason or another into losing money. And so these, again, these folks are very clever at how they're doing all this.
Yes,
I think one of the more recent scams has been supposedly the IRS calls and demands money in the form of give us your credit card number for the phone, you know. And there's no such thing. The IRS never, ever, ever does that. But a lot of people can get suckered. These they're getting more sophisticated in many ways. So it's just I think it behooves all of us to keep alert to you know, possible scams and other problems out there.
Well, let's talk a bit about your outstanding 2013 book, Don't Let Them Psych You Out, Psychological Self-Defense for Dealing with Difficult People. How is your book organized? I know it's in like three parts, and tell us a little about how it's organized.
Right. I developed the book, you know, based on a lot of my own experiences, you know, decades ago, found that you know, a certain organizational pattern was going to help me present this information, you know, most effectively for readers, and so the first part is entitled The Basics of Psychological Self-Defense.
Oh.
And in that section, I really run through just kind of the whole background essentials of psychological self-defense. And while I mention that term, I like to let people know that I use self-defense in kind of a loose way, but in many aspects, that's really what's going on. You're there defending your psyche, and as you build up your confidence and build up your ability to thwart manipulations from others. But anyway, that first section's basically on the essential steps I've found over the years to be most helpful. The second part of the book is entitled When You Psych Yourself Out. And
yeah,
so these
I think
are,
that's fascinating when you talk about the inner needs that you have to conquer before you can keep other people from psyching you out. I like that order that you have there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and the, you know, there's a lot of, you know, thoughts I've put in here on worry, anxiety, anger, guilt, depression, but also criticism. And a lot of people are very sensitive to criticism. And, you know, basically two types of criticism: constructive criticism, of, you know, designed to help you. But then there's also the destructive type, the unfriendly criticism that a lot of us don't like and find very uncomfortable. So again, some techniques to not let all of that get in your head and interfere with your ability to live happily and healthily. And then finally, the
criticism you can take the wrong way.
for sure. And the last section is entitled "When Others Psych You Out," and those are just some common scenarios I've included with various techniques taken from the earlier parts of the book and applied to places like, you know, the store, the family gatherings, and and the like.
How to deal with mother-in-law or whatever.
right.
And, with the holidays coming up, you often don't see these people but once a year or so, and you kind of dread.
and so this is a great time to be thinking about these topics with the holidays coming. There's probably more family strife and criticism and guilt and anxiety and manipulation during the holidays, you know, ironically, than it during any other time of the year.
Everyone says we have to be happy and loving at Christmas time or Thanksgiving time or whatever it is, and so we feel more guilty about getting into a confrontation or maybe take more.
right. And I think we can all relate to that.
Well, is your book written primarily for professionals, or can a simple lay person like me get a lot out of it?
This book is absolutely for everyday readers and average person. I mean, professionals certainly can read it, come up with some techniques to recommend when counseling people, but this is definitely in the self-help type category, and I just find that very, very helpful in the sense that not everybody can invest the time and money in life coaching or counseling, and it's just nice to have these techniques put into a readily available paperback book here.
Call it a meat and potato kind of book. That's the kind
it,
I like.
It definitely is that. yeah, absolutely.
Well, where best should we go to preview and purchase your book or one of your several other books that you've written? What's the best place to go for that?
Well, I appreciate you asking. The book is available at various online outlets. Amazon, Barnes & Noble being two of the largest, but also it's available on Lulu.com and also through my website, which is www.livingwholelivingwell.com. And the books are there, and there are links on my website that will take you to the to the bookstore to
Living Whole Living Well is your website, then, where we should go and learn more.
Yes, sir.
Well, in conclusion, are you tired of feeling like a doormat? Realistically, difficult and manipulative people are not going to go away because our world's full of them. And most people like you and respect you, so you don't stop being nice to others. But as Dr. Z points out, nice and accommodating as you are, you don't have to spend the rest of your life always giving in or letting someone else control your agenda. In the short run, standing up to a demanding person may be uncomfortable. Hardly anyone likes to get into confrontations. But long-term, standing up for yourself and being self-confident may be the only acceptable solution, because if you give in this time and the next, you and your adversary will fall into a pattern where the adversary always expects to get his or her way, and you always expect to give in, and you will be nervous and somewhat intimidated whenever you're around that demanding person, especially challenging if he or she is your boss, your spouse, maybe a coworker or your teenage son or daughter. And a great way to be routinely miserable and to shorten your life is to always give in and be pushed around. But here's some good news. It won't happen overnight, but the more times you stand up to your adversary and let him or her know about your own goals and intention in a nice way but firmly, the more respect you'll receive in return. And heck, if another absolutely refuses to show you total respect, you really don't want to remain in that relationship anyway, although you don't have much choice, obviously, if it's a family member. But a final warning, as Dr. C points out, never apply the theories and techniques that he presents in his book solely to the detriment of someone else. In conclusion, here's an ideal life goal, as I like to put it. Don't ever again let yourself be psyched out, but don't go around psyching others out either. Bottom line, you should always prepare in advance and always communicate with intimidating persons as a win-win proposition. And I'll bet you'll find the difficult relationships soften up. And once again, I recommend you preview and purchase Dr. George Zagreitis' great little book, Don't Let Them Psych You Out. It's a great blueprint demonstrating how to be kind to others but still get your point across and stop playing doormat to anyone and never an attractive role to play. And thanks a million, Dr. Z, for returning, and happy holidays and the best of success in sale of your books and in your psychological counseling and in your family medical practice.
Roy, it's an honor to be on with you again. Thank you so much, and bless you too and all of your work. And I look forward to being on the show again with you sometime.
We'd love to have you back now that you're not quite so constrained with your time.
Yes, thankfully.
So long for now. Back on our November 9th program, I identified 9 common excuses that people so often use at middle age to justify continuing to live their unsatisfying lives, to postpone, in effect, middle age renewal. And I'm convinced that none of these offers a valid reason not to seek a joyful, fulfilling, and productive second half. And I promised back then that I would go over each of the reasons and tell you why I don't think any of them make much sense. And today let's look at the first 3 excuses that people often make. Excuse number 1 is, I'm too busy right now. Well, a simplistic yet appropriate response is, pray tell, what is more important than positively transforming your life? You simply must take the time. Commit yourself to making time now to renew, beginning right now. Once you begin to make progress, you'll find yourself eager to allocate whatever time and energy is necessary to complete your renewal adventure. Make it known to your spouse or significant other, your kids, trusted friends, and business associates that you're going to take time out necessary to make life better both for yourself and for them. But be careful to communicate your desire for change without appearing self-indulgent or in any way threatening. 3, enter each new week with specific blocks of time committed to renewal. You have appointment for renewal just like other important appointments. Can you commit an additional 2 to 6 hours each week visualizing a bright and productive tomorrow? Aren't there 1 or 2 TV shows which you can give up? Do you really need to surf the internet this evening? Inform your spouse and kids of your schedule in advance. Then reflect in a quiet place where you'll not be disturbed. You must make certain you turn off your smartphone, get away from the TV, the laptop, and your spouse and children. If you cannot locate a peaceful room in your home, go to the public library. As an initial goal, commit to take small steps each day to remove the clutter and balance your life and your schedule. And promise to keep loved ones informed of progress. Although life transformation requires extensive personal introspection and prayer to God if you're a believer, I strongly encourage you to share progress with loved ones, routinely describe conclusions, and ask for their advice and support. But remember, in the early stages of renewal, you need not prove anything to anyone. Let's look at excuse number 2. I can't afford to quit my present job, even though I'm unhappy in it. Well, contrary to the common lament, I simply don't have the financial resources. You need not be wealthy to radically improve both your personal emotions and your circumstances. At this early point of renewal, I'm not suggesting that you need make an immediate financial sacrifice. No matter how dissatisfied you may be with your current job, I urge you not to quit your primary vocation just yet, because believe it or not, you may be able to accomplish a positive career makeover right where you are, but with radically altered expectations, clearly defined positive objectives, and a fresh take-charge attitude. In contrast, you may decide to pursue a totally different vocation or lifestyle, but that decision can be postponed until later. As a first step, please confirm yourself to yourself that your ultimate objective is not just a successful career makeover, but total fulfillment as a balanced, well-rounded adult. I urge you to contemplate, I can't say the word, the distinction between yourself as a contributing member of the human race and as a simple provider. You are not just your job. Unless you can begin to balance career with other essential elements of daily living and relationships, you most likely will continue to come up short on joy, satisfaction, and, ironically, on service to others. And here's excuse number three. My life will change someday when. My life will change when is probably the most self-destructive of all procrastination excuses, because the when seldom, if ever, arises, and if it does, it more than likely will be replaced by a new when. In the end, every when may turn into a regrettable I could have been. The bottom line is deceptively simple. Never pin your hopes and dreams upon unrealistic, poorly defined assumptions or depend solely upon fate or the initiative of someone else to accomplish life-fulfilling objectives. The only dreams worth having are the ones that you can realistically implement. Rather than simply wishing for a better tomorrow, you first need to define and visualize that tomorrow in vivid detail, then follow up by charting a clear and certain course of navigation to the intended destination, then actually take action to launch that journey. Your course may need to be altered from time to time. Nothing ever goes right, totally according to plan, but your quintessential life objectives need never change. I challenge you to examine your very own unique core essence. What matters most to you? What experiences bring you joy and satisfaction? It's definitely okay to dream, better yet to visualize a life precisely as you wish it to be, but it's not okay to make your dreams contingent upon unrealistic expectations over which you have little or no control, or to use when as an excuse for not taking action. As we've suggested before in this program, don't be like the old hound dog observed here in Iowa on the farmer's front porch. The old dog periodically let out a mournful howl. When a visitor asked the farmer what was troubling the dog, the farmer replied, "The old dog is lying on a tack, but he's too lazy to roll over or get up off the tack." Apparently the tack hurt, but not enough to motivate the old dog to change. Now, I'm not implying any of you out there are old dogs, but I do offer this solemn promise. If you take the initiative to get up off and change whatever is troubling you, whatever tack you have in your life at middle age, you will feel much better and the tack will be gone. At least the tack will still be there, but the hurt will be gone. And that's our program for today. Tune in next week when our guest will advise us how not to put crap in your kid's diaper. Sounds like an interesting topic. See you then on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.